Accession number 18505, Reel 4.
Reel 4.
He walked just a few yards along the road, introduced us to another man who had a Volkswagen car sitting by the pavement. They were talking together, and he said to us, "Get in, I'll be with you in a minute." And we got in the car. We were driven round Antwerp, eventually into a backyard of a high building, taken up the back stairs and put into a room. Left alone for a few minutes, and the driver came back, opened the door, and standing outside was a German in uniform with a Schmeisser across his chest. And he said, "This is Gestapo headquarters, Antwerp. You go no further."
This was the 16th of July, apparently.
Yes, 16th of July.
How had it all happened that you were captured?
We'd been handed in. We'd been sold for 30 pieces of silver. I have a letter. I think it's in the loft. The letter came from a padre in the North Irish Horse Regiment. They were an armoured regiment, I believe, during the war. I'd been interviewed by MI5 or MI6 regarding this man at the newsagent shop when there's and his transmitter. I was asked who was the last person that I could vouch for as being on the side of the Allies, if you like. Now, that was a very, very difficult question. I thought about it. There was so much activity going on in that bookshop that I didn't know whether the woman was on the side of the British, or on the side of the Allies, or on the side of the Germans. I didn't know whether or not the Englishman was a traitor. And I eventually thought, well, the last man I could vouch for was the courier who brought us on the train and left us on Hoboken Station. And I explained that to them. Now, I then got this letter from the padre of the North Irish Horse, saying that he'd been approached by the woman in the bookshop. She'd been interviewed and accused of working for the Germans. And she was upset because they told her that it was me that had made the accusations against her. So he said, perhaps you would write to her and explain the position. I thought about it. But the letter finished. You would probably like to know that the person who betrayed you has been traced and shot. I wrote to the woman and I just explained, as I explained to you, that I didn't know, but I ruled out this man on the train because he had never got as far as the cafe, and I never heard from her since. And that was the end of that, actually, of that episode. It was my information, you know, it was to tell me that the Judas who betrayed me had paid the price.
But he didn't say who it was.
No, he didn't give me his name.
So, what happened to you at Gestapo headquarters?
I was taken from Gestapo headquarters that night and placed in Antwerp jail.
What were conditions like there?
Bug infested. You got a mess tin with a spoonful of barley porridge in it, a slice of black bread with what they called oleo, which to me was lard, not even margarine, and a cup of ersatz coffee. I could drink the ersatz coffee, but the other two, I couldn't. And there was a shelf above the door of the cell, and I just put them up there. And they came around the next day, and they gave me my rations. You know, held out the dish, and they put the spoon, a spoonful of barley in it, and a slice of bread. And I tasted them, and they weren't any good. And that went on. Now, on the fifth day, I was a bit hungry. And I tasted them, and they didn't taste bad. And I scoffed a lot. The 5 days' rations, all in one.
How long were you there for?
In Antwerp jail, a month.
By yourself?
No. I was by myself the first night, and then somebody else was pushed in, and we ended up, there was about 10 of us in the cell.
Belgians or British?
British, all airmen. The chain was broken in Antwerp. Anybody that came into Antwerp along the chain was leading to jail.
Were you interrogated there?
I was interrogated. the chap that interrogated me was in civilian clothes, but I'd seen him in guard's uniform on the, in the prison. There's nothing. This is not a Gestapo man or anything. And he just asked me where I got my clothes, my civilian suit, where I got my card, my identity card, and I said, "Oh, clothes." I said, "I stole them." Identity card, I said, "Somebody I don't know. I bought it." "Oh, well," he said, "you'll be taken to Germany and shot." And he left us. We were taken from Antwerp in a furniture van type thing to Brussels. And there was a interrogation center there. But we noticed that the guards and that there were wearing Luftwaffe uniforms, not army uniforms. And this was the first indication that we got that we'd been accepted as RAF and not as army. You see. Because they said to it, thought you were a soldier. Where's your uniform? You spy. You see, this was the line that they worked on. And that was... and then we were taken to Brussels, and the following day, we weren't interrogated or anything at Brussels. The following day, we were taken to the train, and we caught the 3 p.m. express passenger train for Aachen. And all that way, it's about as far as from Liverpool to Leeds, Brussels to Aachen. Every inch of the track had been relaid. Every bridge had been rebuilt of timber. Cut down trees. And it took 9 hours. We got to Aachen at midnight. And our biggest worry during that trip was if there happened to be a spare fighter up there patrolling the line. We could have changed train at Aachen and again at Dusseldorf. Not sure at Duisburg, because I was shot down at Duisburg. Now, I think we... Or maybe we went through Duisburg. And then in the morning, we were as far south as Cologne. And it was amazing to see the Cologne Cathedral standing there, and not another brick standing all for a mile or so around it. And it had all been cleared. You know, a lovely cathedral. And we were just in the train going down the middle of the line, and we went from there through to Frankfurt. And we got out the train at Frankfurt, and we're taken to Oberhausel.
This is Dulag-Luft.
Dulag-Luft.
What happened to you there?
Nothing. We got kitted out with uniforms there. That was the thing. There was no interrogation that we knew of. But we had been warned that there was a bloke called Williams who'd gone bandit and was working for the Germans in one of these interrogation centres. And when we got to Dulag-Luft, Oberhausel, Williams was there. And later on, 6 months later or more, Williams turned up at Stalag-Luft 7, saying that it had come to his notice that people thought he was working for the Germans, and he wasn't, and he'd asked to be transferred, and he was, because he wasn't interested in working for the Germans. And we'd in the camp, we had a powwow between ourselves, and we decided that we would say nothing to him or about him. We would just leave it until such times as we got back home, and then let the appropriate authority do what it did.
Did you speak to him at Oberhausel? Did you speak to Williams at Oberhausel?
Yes, because I got a uniform from him. He was in the in the uniform stores, the Red Cross. I think the Red Cross dished up the uniforms. They got them from the different different countries. But he was there, and I noticed. Some considerable time later, I noticed that two lines in the morning paper, forgetting his first name, but Williams, was executed at Pentonville for treachery.
So you didn't have an interrogation at Oberhausel?
No.
Were you then sent off to a Stalag-Luft?
Yes, we went to Stalag-Luft 7.
Where was this?
Stalag-Luft 7 was a place called Bankau, Obersilesia. About 7 miles from the old Polish border and 10 from the old Czechoslovakian border, way in the deep far corner of the old Germany.
What were conditions like there?
Well, when we arrived there, it was all temporary accommodation. Wooden huts made to build six for people who had been bombed out, etc., and these things were dished up to them. And they'd just been erected. Anybody could erect them. You know, you talk about prefabs. Well, I mean, these things were just garden sheds, really. But they took six, and that was we were free inside the wire. We could associate in any way we wished. And the Red Cross parcels were a bit short, but you got German rations. In other words, you were supposed to get so much meat, but the meat we got was horse flesh. And when they sent the half a horse in, they left the head on it so that you knew it was horse flesh. They had there was a kitchen there. You got potatoes, sometimes dried peas, and then whatever you got out of your Red Cross parcel. And it wasn't bad. They didn't interfere. The Germans didn't interfere with you in any way. They had ferrets, as we called them. The Germans that had gone to America and answered the Führer's call to return home, these fellas in a white suit, and they spoke English with their American accent. They spoke it exceptionally well, and you had to be careful what you were saying in front of them, because they understood every word you were saying and every nod you were making. But in the camp we had a wireless set. That was we had a concert party one time, and we bribed a guard to get us a camera and film to take photographs of the concert party. His price was high, but he got it. And then we told him that we wanted a radio set, when he said we couldn't have one, and we said, well, then the commandant will have this. And we had the photograph of him doing a deal. We got our radio. And the Germans found out that we had the radio. They never found the radio. They found out that we had it, or they suspected that we had it, because we had our own news bulletins and things. And they searched and searched and searched for him. And then one day, he came in and called, I forget what it was, five or six names out. And these blokes had to go forward, and one of the ferrets took each one to his hut, collected his gear, and started them on their way home, repatriated. One of them had a wooden leg, and the radio set was repatriated inside the wooden leg.
How long did you stay at Bangkok for?
We left Bangkok
presumably in the winter of 44-45.
Yes, it was February, I think. I'm just telling you.
I think it was the early part of 1945 that you left there.
Yes, we left there. I would have said the beginning of February, but it was certainly January, February. And we could hear the Russian guns in the distance when they moved us out.
Marching?
The guns.
Were you marching out?
Yes, we were marching. With our sole possessions in a kit bag over our shoulders. And they marched us from there for 250 miles, I think it was.
Don't worry about statistics. What were conditions like on the march?
Oh, they were terrible. The conditions on the march, we were sleeping in farmyards. The Germans had nothing to give us. So we had to do the best we could. We'd been given 3 loaves of bread per man when we set out from Bangkok. And it was, we got no more bread given to us on the way. Although one night when they put us into a farm, the Oberfeldwebel went looking for the farmer to tell him that we were there for the night. And while he was doing that, we milked his cows for him, every one of them. Anything that was like that, you know, it was...